and welcome to this week's Inside Education. I'm Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. On this week's programme, we look at using new technologies to teach languages, including Irish, French, German, Spanish and any other language, in the company of educator Joe Dale. Joe was a speaker at this year's Computers and Education Society of Ireland, or CESI, conference, which was held recently. He is an independent consultant who works with a range of organisations such as Network for Languages, ALL, the British Council, the BBC, Skype, Microsoft and The Guardian. He is a former CESI keynote speaker and a recognised expert on technology and language learning. Indeed, he and I share an interest in podcasting. Joe Dale has an encyclopedic knowledge of technologies that can help support language teaching. I would suggest sharpening your pencils or taking out your notepads to take note of the names of some of the apps, websites and software that he'll recommend. I'll also have links to them from the podcast on insideed.com. When we spoke at the CESI conference, Joe first told me how he got interested in using technology to teach languages.
I got interested in technology as a teacher in about 2001 or so. I remember there's a website called linguascope.com, which when it first started was bonjour.org.uk, and it was sort of interactive exercises with immediate feedback. And I remember that came out about 2001, 2002, and I thought this was incredible. And I got really engaged by this idea. I then went out and found out about Hot Potatoes, which is a free program for creating multimedia exercises, and I could see that that would be a really good way of practicing grammar, let's say, in a sort of very sort of mechanistic, traditional way of practicing grammar. But doing it via Hot Potatoes on the computer meant the students found it much more engaging, and also they would complete many, many more exercises in the same amount of time compared to doing it on paper. So that was one of my starting points. I then went on to the Yahoo group MFL Resources, which is a way of sharing interesting PowerPoints or documents or discussing the hot topics of the day. And I downloaded many, many PowerPoints that had been transferred onto the group by leading practitioners around the country and, well, around the world, basically. And I didn't just use their resources as they were. I just unpicked the different animations that they put together and then recreated them in my own presentations. And I found that the whole sort of movement and colour and sites like Animation Factory, which the children always would really like, so sort of comic images that would move in funny ways, and they found that really engaging. And I used that for presenting vocabulary or presenting structures, as well as sort of speaking, practicing speaking and that sort of thing, but mainly for whole class teaching.
Can you just bring me through that? Say, so supposing, for example, you want to teach a French sentence, how would you use the technology and integrate the two?
Essentially, you need to make sure that if you have any sort of movement and that sort of thing, that it's concentrating on what's important or the thing that you want the children to focus on. So in relation to, let's say, the perfect tense, if you're doing the perfect tense with the children and you wanted to concentrate on how to form the perfect tense, say with the auxiliary and the past participle with the e acute on the end, then that is what you would get to move. So maybe you'd have the auxiliary flying in from wherever, whatever angle, you'd have the e acute flying in, or maybe some sort of emphasis animation in order to focus on that. So in a way, less is more. That's what I used to find anyway. And things like if you're doing hair colour and eye colour, you would just make sure that you would have the same image of the hair, but you would just change the colour of the hair or change the colour of the eye. So in other words, you're focusing on the important issue in relation to what the children are learning, rather than just having animations for the sake of it. Because some people fall into the trap of saying, oh, it's PowerPoint, I'll do this animation, that animation, and actually it becomes quite confused. And to focus on, to try and make it as simple as possible, focusing on what's important in relation to the lesson. So in relation to, as you said, sort of sentence building, I would focus on, if it was, say, word order, actually showing the words moving in the way that you want them to, or adjectival agreement, making sure maybe that you're using colour, which I usually used a lot for reinforcing gender difference. So you'd have, say, all the nouns in all the masculine nouns in blue and all the masculine adjectival agreements in blue as well, and showing them next to each other and showing how the adjective goes after the noun in French as opposed to before the noun in English. And so those sorts of movements and animations, I think, work very well in PowerPoint.
And was that for a demonstration, or was there something for the children to do then?
based on that.
Okay, so that would be demonstration, and then we would then get the children to do lots and lots of, you know, interactive exercises, say in hot potatoes, showing them how...
What are hot potatoes?
Okay, so hot potatoes is a free tool which you can download for creating multimedia interactive web pages, such as for creating crosswords or gap fills or drag and drop or reordering, those sorts of things. So perfect for language teaching.
Okay. And what about one of the hardest things we find here, particularly, and I'm thinking about the Irish language in particular, but other languages as well, is getting students to talk. Was there any way that you could use technology to encourage children either to listen or to produce language themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. It's another great introduction, let's say, nice segue into podcasting, which I then got into sort of 2005, 2006, and blogging, or the whole sort of Web 2.0 explosion, let's say, in wikis and the rest of it. And I used to find that using tools like Audacity, so a free tool for recording, editing sound. I actually met one of the developers today, who was talking about Kodo Dojo yesterday at the SESI meet, who's one of the developers for Audacity. So I was, you know, it was very much like respect and all this. And I was, that was really lovely. We had a lovely breakfast together this morning talking about Audacity and open source software. So I think that Using Audacity is probably one of my favourite tools out of all the tools that there are, including apps and everything, for recording, editing sound, for promoting speaking, for improving pronunciation, for extending speaking skills. And I would also encourage people listening to this, if you haven't done podcasting before, always get the children to write a script. Maybe do that in a word processing package, and then use an online tool like QPrompter, which is really nice, which turns your browser into a professional-looking teleprompter. So it means that the children can feel like a newsreader, as it were. But what's really good about...
Is that an app, QPrompter?
No, it's a website, and but it will work on the iPad as well. There are, if you're looking for an app which does the same sort of thing, there's one called iPrompt for the iPod Touch or iPhone, or iPrompt Pro for the iPad, which is just like the larger version, as it were. But QPrompter works fine on the iPad as well, and it's good for recording audio, or for recording audio in a movie as well. So you can just have maybe someone holding up the cue card, as it were, and then get someone to read it, or put the iPad next to your laptop if you're recording with audio. Or if you're looking for an all-in-one solution, there's an app which I found recently called I Said What, which is one of the ones I recommended actually in the presentation I've just given, which has got a terrible name, I Said What, !
And how do you spell I Said What?
Just as you would expect. So I, the letter I, said, S-A-I-D, what, W-H-A-T, I Said What. But what's the killer feature about that is you can add your own script and read that back, and it can scroll as well, and you can record while you're reading it. So that's really nice, because there's lots and lots of apps out there which allow you to record audio, but not that many which allow you to have the script as well. There's another one called RecPad, R-E-C space P-A-D, which not only lets you do the same thing with audio, but video as well. And there's one called VRT2, which is Video Recorder something 2. I can't remember. Anyway, VRT2, which lets you have a script with video as well.
So what exactly then? They make the podcast, and do they listen back to it, or how do you, where does the language teaching come into this then?
Okay, so what they would do is they would, you wouldn't have podcasting as a bolt-on. It would be integrated with what you're doing anyway. So in other words, the idea would be that the children would do sort of a standard practice of a conversation or a presentation. So they would do a lot of rehearsing, first of all, before they went anywhere near a computer or Audacity or have you. Once they've rehearsed it and they've ironed it out and made it as good as they possibly can do with informal sort of teacher prompting and help and what have you, then they would then record it. And then they would then edit their recording, and I found that the recording and editing process is a fantastic way of deepening their learning, deepening their understanding of the topic. And then they would then finish that off, create an MP3 file from that, and then with parental permission, publish it onto a website, a blog, a virtual learning environment, or wherever. Recently, I would have been recommending Posterous as a blogging platform, but unfortunately we now know that by the end of April it's going to be closing down, which I think is a huge shame, because normally I would recommend just sending the MP3 file as an email attachment, and it would automatically embed onto the Posturist blog with its own player, which is really lovely. But there are other ways of doing the same sort of thing. You could use Audioboo and that sort of thing, or SoundCloud, but you can't edit. And I think that in language learning, the editing process is absolutely key. That's why Audacity is, I like it so much.
How do you keep track of all these tools and apps and everything that you seem to know about?
I'm not a good person to sort of talk about, you know, work-life balance, really, because this is my passion stroke obsession. And anyone that knows me knows that, and including my wife, who's very, very patient and has been over many, many years now. But it's just something which I find fascinating. And you know, to try and keep up with everything, or as much as you possibly can. I mean, obviously there is information overload, but I find that using really simple syndication RSS feeds in Google Reader is a great way of keeping on track with you know, the latest developments, or following important people on Twitter who are tweeting about interesting things that you're interested in. And there's also a website called paper.li, which I think is absolutely brilliant for collating information together. For example, there's a website which was an experiment to start off with, which is based on the links in the tweets of a certain account which I've set up called MFL Times. So if you go to paper.li/MFL Times, you'll find a daily e-magazine which is created through the links of people who are on Twitter following that account who are interested in languages, and it's completely free. And it started off as an experiment with about 70 people or so following it, and now there's something like 600 people, I think, following it and adding to it. And now if there's any languages related story in the national press in England, it will definitely appear in the MFL Times. So those people who feel they haven't got time to be part of Twitter can subscribe to the MFL Times for free and get an email every day, giving them like a one-stop shop fix to the main stories people are tweeting about in relation to languages, which is really useful, I think.
You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Podcasts of previous programmes can be downloaded from iTunes or from our website, insideed.com. This week, I'm speaking to language and technology educator Jo Dale, who gave a workshop at this year's SESI conference. I next asked Jo to tell me what his presentation at the conference was about.
Today's presentation was looking at iPads and particularly how they can enhance teaching and learning. I was looking at different sort of educational theories to start off with, and then we sort of got down into more practical ideas to do with recommended apps and that sort of thing. So I started off by comparing how the iPad in relation to sort of technology is really, or mobile technology generally, is really right at the fore at the moment. That most teachers who are early adopters are going for things like iPads and mobile technology, and then we've got people just behind there, as it were, sort of behind the innovators of the early adopters. We've got people who are using Web 2.0 technologies. We've then got people using IWBs, interactive whiteboards, and there may be possibly the majority, arguably, people using PowerPoint and word processing. So I started off with that graphic in order to try and show the range of different teachers who are using technology. You're trying to, as it were, tick that box of ICT, because some people, and let's be honest, you know, some people don't like using technology or just want to do it because they're told they have to, and some people, you know, can't get enough of it and love the technology and want to use that all the time. And either extreme is not good. I think we need to find a balance, obviously, and go for a blended learning approach. So using technology when it's right to use that, the right tool for the right job, and in other situations to use other ways of learning, songs and doing actions and learning, you know, active grammar and that sort of thing, because my background is language teaching, so that's really what I know about. And so it's very important to choose the right tool for the right job. So we started off with that. We then looked at a graphic suggesting that by 2014-2015 that most people accessing the internet, it will be on a mobile device. I know that in Africa at the moment, probably the vast majority of people who access the internet, it's on a mobile device. But because of things like the iPad and the iPod Touch and the iPhone started off with in 2007, that this sort of rise of mobile technology has been absolutely huge on a global level. And then we looked at sort of more theories to do with with why mobile technology is a good idea. So we looked at Bloom's taxonomy. We looked at the SAMR model, S-A-M-R, by Dr. Ruben Puentejura. We looked at Gardner's multiple intelligences and how that related to sort of different apps which could be associated with the different types of multiple intelligences. And then we looked at sort of more specific app recommendations, and I went through a couple that maybe people hadn't heard of because I only had 25 minutes to do the presentation. And so I started off by naming one which I'm sure that lots of people don't know about, called Eyeconit, which is E-Y-E-C-O-N-I-T. And that's an app which scans any image of an app, and it should, as long as the image is of good quality, it should be able to tell you what the app is without the actual, you know, seeing the wording underneath. So that's really useful, I think, for those people that maybe will find images of iPad screens on the internet or in a newspaper, wherever it might be, and the actual app is not described. So if you scan it with Eyeconit, then hopefully that will then come up and it'll tell you what it is. If the image is not particularly detailed, it'll have a good stab at it, but it might get it wrong. And it actually tells you, it's not definite that this is definitely the right app, but it gives you a good range, which is good. And another one that I mentioned was called My Story Bookmaker for Kids, and that's an app for creating ebooks with your own personalized images, and you can do an audio voiceover as well, and that's a really nice way of accessing higher order thinking skills in relation to Bloom's taxonomy. So some of the others I think were probably well known, but with the time limits I couldn't describe every single one. And then on the next slide I actually wrote what they all were, because I'm going to make the presentation available to download either via SESI or via my Twitter account, just Joe Dell on Twitter, and we'll just go from there. So and then I looked at some practical examples of how teachers are using them in the classroom. So we looked at QR codes, for example, and looked at how the Orasma app, using augmented reality, can make a wall talk, or make a talking wall, which is quite cool. So in other words, you can have an image as a trigger image, and then you scan it with the Orasma app, and it will then play a video. So it's a nice way of having evidence of speaking.
So it'll play what kind of a video will it play?
Okay, so you'd create a 30-second video or so on the device. It's available for Android as well. It's not just an iOS-specific device. So you'd create the video, and then you would then create what they call a trigger image or a trigger prompt, which could be anything. But it's nice. It's a good idea to have a static image. So it's a nice idea with a wall display to have that as an image. And so you would then scan the image, and then that would then launch the video. So that's your trigger image, in other words. So it's this idea of creating a talking wall. And this idea was put together by Kelda Richards, who is a leading light in promoting the use of mobile devices, particularly iPads, in her school at Isker College in the southwest of England. And she came up with this idea of a talking wall, and she put the blog post together on keldarichards.wordpress.com, which describes the step-by-step way of doing this. And ironically as well, she put together a YouTube clip actually showing the process, which is what I played today. I wasn't online though, I downloaded it, and so I knew it would definitely work. I wouldn't have, if there were any online connectivity issues, it would definitely work. And in 2011 I was speaking at a conference in Montreal, and this was when I was just really aware of how she was using Orasmo, which I thought was really groundbreaking, exciting stuff, and that's why I wanted to include it in my presentation, because that's what I tend to concentrate on. And so there I was on this coach on the way to Quebec City from Montreal, and there was free Wi-Fi on the coach, so I sent her a tweet or a DM, direct message, saying, could you maybe please put together a video just showing how Orasmo works? And then she did that and sent it to me, and I downloaded it on the coach journey on the way back. So that was really cool, and I've been showing it in different presentations ever since.
How do you spell that Orasma app?
Okay, so it's Orasma, so it's A-U-R-A-S-M-A, Orasma. So the idea is where you create this, what they call an aura, or aura, I suppose, no, aura anyway, which is A-U-R-A. So the video and the trigger image combined is an aura. And I just think, not only in languages, but I think in lots of subjects, it's a really nice way of promoting speaking. And I mean, you can only make short video clips, but I think that's fine. And it's a real way of engaging students in sort of a Harry Potter-esque augmented reality, which I think is really cool. And it's free.
And how did you first get interested in technology? in education?
Okay, well, as I said earlier, about 2001, 2002, I came across the bonjour.org.uk website and just got engaged from there, really. But I think the main change was 2005, 2006, when I discovered, you know, Web 2.0 by reading the Times Educational Supplement, listening to people talk like Ewan McIntosh, who was a big influence, or still is a big influence, but was particularly a big influence at the time, as I know he was on many, many people. And then going out of my way to find real experts in their field and do podcast interviews with them, similar to what we're doing right now. So, for example, back in about 2006, I think it was 2007, I did an interview with Joe Malloy, who is has been many, many sessies over the years, and he was one of the absolutely early adopters in relation to podcasting, and we did an hour long, I think it was, interview all about how he had integrated podcasting within his own primary curriculum, which is absolutely fascinating.
And your own blog, how would you describe it?
Well, I normally describe it as a treasure trove of resources to do with languages and ICT. But to be honest with you, it was an absolute experiment to start off with. In fact, before I started my own blog in May 2006, in December 2005, I was asked by the TES to contribute to an ICT blog, which is what I did. And I wrote about 13 or 14 blog posts from that point. And then I started to get into it, and obviously I enjoyed the fact that I knew that what I was writing about was going to a big audience, which was great. But it was really when I started my own blog that I really got into blogging. And likewise with Twitter, I signed up for Twitter in 2007, and just went from there, really. So I think that the blog proved a great way for sort of my own personal reflection, but also, more importantly, in lots of ways, is it was a fantastic hub for building a language community. And now that has now, as it were, transferred into Twitter. And I've talked a lot about this community called the MFL Twitterati, which I helped to nurture from sort of 2008 onwards, from the face-to-face conferences that I helped to organise, the Isle of Wight conference and then the ICT and Languages conference, ILILC, and there's been three of those. The last one was literally a couple of weeks ago in February at Southampton University. And I also wrote an article for The Guardian a couple of weeks ago, which basically talks about the roots of the MFL Twitterati and the impact, more importantly, in the classroom. So some of the things that people have talked about who are part of this 500 strong community is that they feel that if they maybe are feeling a bit isolated in their own department, or they don't share the same enthusiasm as their colleagues, that they can hop onto their Twitter account and they can read what other people are tweeting about, and they can have conversations and get enthralled about Erasmo or whatever it might be. And also by being exposed to lots and lots of interesting techniques and pedagogies to do with languages, they're able to improve their own lessons. And as a result of that, their children are benefiting and finding the learning more engaging. So all in all, I think it's been a huge success story, but the blog was definitely the starting point for building that community.
If there was one message you wanted Irish teachers to remember after your visit here, what would it be?
Get yourself onto Twitter and think about learning as collaborative. So learning with each other. I think that SESI, this point was made yesterday, I think it's absolutely fantastic that we're now celebrating the 40th anniversary of SESI, and it shows, particularly the fact that we've got over 300 people here today, the interest that people have of sharing ideas. And so the SESI meet last night, and obviously the conference today, is absolute proof of that. So what I would say is you're doing a really, really good job, and you should carry on doing that, and I wish you all the best in the future to spread the word about the power of communities, of online communities, but also the power of face-to-face communities, meeting up for SESI meets and other activities around the country. And that's how I first got interested in SESI back in about 2007, I think. When again, I heard Ewan McIntosh was speaking at the conference, so I said, "Well, you know, if Ewan McIntosh is doing that, then I should ask if I can come and speak as well." Which is what happened, and I paid for myself to come over and the rest of it. And then I was asked to be the keynote in 2010. And I think that that what's happening in Ireland through SESI is absolutely wonderful, and long may it continue. So, happy birthday!
The keynote speaker this morning, John Naughton, he sounded a kind of a cautionary note about technology in education. What did you make of his presentation?
I think the role of the keynote is to say challenging things, and I thought it was absolutely fantastic. It was really interesting to see that the Twitter back channel going on when he was talking. One of the things which I particularly picked up on was his message about PowerPoint. In other words, and he seemed to be serious when he said it, but he said, you know, people who are advocating the use of PowerPoint essentially should be sacked. And I don't agree with that at all. I think that actually we must always be aware of the fact that people who may be, you know, only know how to use PowerPoint or word processing or what have you, you know, that's so it's okay. It's not brilliant, let's say, but we mustn't sort of, you know, make them feel as if they're worthless or that they should be sacked. And that was something which I was quite surprised in a way that the keynote you know said basically people, you know, if they're using PowerPoint they should be sacked. And it was interesting, a few comments going out on Twitter saying I think it was Anne actually was saying, oh well, maybe Ceci can't go ahead then with all the people that have planned their presentations using PowerPoint, which I thought was quite amusing. But it is a serious point, and I think that we should have the early adopters and the innovators pushing the envelope and trying new things, and then also be very supportive to those people who find technology scary, or maybe, you know, have not grown up with that sort of, you know, technology enriched environment. And that's absolutely fine. I mean, sometimes people will say to me, oh, my son or my daughter is very good at technology, and they'll show me how to do this, Joe, you know, because a lot of what I do is train teachers on the use of technology, and that's absolutely fine. And I think that we shouldn't be too ruthless about this. At the end of the day, you know, we're all teachers. I know I'm not in the classroom right now, but we're basically all teachers trying to help each other. And that's, again, that spirit I feel is very strong in CESI as well as in other communities that I'm part of. So that's something that we should celebrate, I think, and not be too ruthless about these sorts of things. We're all human, aren't we, at the end of the day?
And I'll bring you my interview with the keynote speaker, John Naughton, in a future programme. Well, that's it for this week's Inside Education. You can listen to podcasts of previous programmes on insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email me at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to my guest this week, Joe Dale, and to the organising committee of CESI 2013, especially Anne McMorrow and John Heffernan. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening. Thank you.